Well, still kind of analyzing this stuff that came out of Paris. And we've got, obviously, today's Tuesday, so we have Walt Rubel coming in the second hour. But I wanted to get back to the stuff that was coming out of Paris and really the political fallout of the situation over there. And I was, I thought it was interesting that even after this attack, that the Democratic candidates would not talk about radical Islam. And the president is irritated at the right because he doesn't have time to talk to. Basically, he doesn't have time to talk about this Muslim thing, the Syrian thing. What he wants to do is he's just going to make his decisions, and people need to understand that he's a president and to get out of the way. And I understand that he's the one who's got the power here. So the left is offering a failed view of leadership, as they always do at the highest levels. Because they want to squeeze democracy out of these decisions, and the great man is going to come along and offer his decisions, his values, his truths, and it really creates just a total disaster. And so we're trying to figure out what U.S. policy is now. In the meantime, we've got governors who are acting as leaders because what they're doing is I think four or five, at least half of America's governors are saying, we don't want these Syrians over here. And somebody came up and told me that only 6 minutes of my show recorded yesterday, which I apologize for. I make a phone call into Blog Talk Radio through Google, and sometimes the phone call gets kind of cut off. There is a ton of stuff out there. I want to get through as much as I can before Walt gets here, and I've got here some interesting stuff. I just play it as it comes up, but I got the most provocative and interesting clips for you yesterday so that we could continue to go over this. So the question is out there, there's a couple of basic questions. Number one, I'll tackle it from the American side first, which is, what is our thing? You don't know all history. It doesn't mean that you have that you have your values correct. Clearly, the president's values are off, no matter how smart he is. Now, there are people that have come along and said the reason that he's not that smart, the reason that he is released his grades, for example, is that he is not really that smart. Now, you know, that may be true. And I would tend to think that I just listening to the guy, I don't find him to be that compelling intellectually. But let's just say, for the sake of the argument, he's the next Einstein. He's got the wrong ideas. He's got the wrong values. It doesn't matter. And this notion that I am personally carrying the truth with me and I'm going to basically either force it on people or charm them into accepting it or do stuff when they're distracted, that's totally, it's a no-go zone. We're supposed to have an educated electorate that is engaged in the process governance, not some person that comes along leading a dumbed down population where the education system has been ruined, where he's going to auger in the future. You know, it's a very bad model. Anyway, here's Obama talking, ironically, hours before this latest attack in Paris about how we have contained ISIS. It's just another screw up by this guy. He never admits he's wrong or he's made a mistake. He's made so many of these type of unforced errors. Check it out.
My dad and center in my exclusive interview with President Obama yesterday. When we spoke in the cabinet room shortly before the strike, the president acknowledged how difficult it will be to eliminate the threat from that deadly terror group.
Even your friendly critics, Fareed Zakaria, says that what you have on the ground now is not going to be enough. Every couple of months, you're going to be faced with the same choice, back down or double down.
I think what is true is that this has always been a multi-year project, precisely because the governance structures in the Sunni areas of Iraq are weak, and there are none in Syria. And we don't have ground forces there in sufficient numbers to simply march into Iraq and Syria and clean the whole place out. And as a consequence, we've always understood that our goal has to be militarily constraining ISIL's capabilities, cutting off their supply lines, cutting off their financing.
But ISIS is gaining strength, aren't they?
Well, no, I don't think they're gaining strength. What is true is that from the start, our goal has been first to contain, and we have contained them. They have not gained ground in Iraq, and in Syria, they'll come in, they'll leave, but you don't see this systematic march by ISIL across the terrain. What we have not yet been able to do is to completely decapitate their command and control structures.
All right, so that's what he says there, and God bless Obama, right? So here is what I'm saying is that, you know, when you listen to him talking about this stuff, I really think that you know, if you know people who challenge him, they don't have the advisor that he does. They don't have his experience. Originally, Obama had no experience, so I guess nobody was the great genius that was. But he presents himself continually as a person who's studying reality. And he's drawing the only conclusion available. He's the one who's in contact with reality. He has the world's best advisors. He's the one who's making the right decisions. It is not really a statement. It's not a persuasive statement. It is a statement that I'm right, you're wrong, I'm the leader, you're not, I'm the genius, you're the idiot. Sit back, I'll drive the vehicle. It's a very troubling and dangerous way to operate as a leader, and he's so self-satisfied, it's astounding. But here's some more from him saying, I didn't mean to say that ISIS was contained when clearly they're not.
Margaret Brennan, CBS.
And by the way, this is from the Antalya summit in Turkey from, I guess, yesterday.
Thank you, Mr. President. A more than year-long bombing campaign in Iraq and in Syria has failed to contain the ambition and the ability of ISIS to launch attacks in the West. Have you underestimated their abilities? And will you widen the rules of engagement for U.S. forces to take more aggressive action?
No, we haven't underestimated our abilities. This is actually why we're in Iraq as we speak, and why we're operating in Syria as we speak. And it's precisely why we have mobilized 65 countries to go after ISIL, and why I hosted at the United Nations an entire discussion of counterterrorism strategies and curbing the flow of foreign fighters, and why we've been putting pressure on those countries that have not been as robust as they need to in tracking the flow of foreign fighters in and out of Syria and Iraq. And so there has been an acute awareness on the part of my administration from the start that it is possible for an organization like ISIL that has such a twisted ideology and has shown such extraordinary brutality and complete disregard for innocent lives, that they would have the capabilities to potentially strike in the West. And because thousands of fighters have flowed from the West and are European citizens, a few hundred from the United States, but far more from Europe, that when those foreign fighters returned, it posed a significant danger. And we have consistently worked with our European partners, disrupting plots in some cases. Sadly, this one was not disrupted in time. But understand that one of the challenges we have in this situation is that if you have a handful of people who don't mind dying, they can kill a lot of people. That's one of the challenges of terrorism. It's not their sophistication or the particular weaponry that they possess, but it is the ideology that they carry with them and their willingness to die. And in those circumstances, tracking each individual, making sure that we are disrupting and preventing these attacks is a constant effort of vigilance and requires extraordinary coordination. Now, part of the reason that it is important what we do in Iraq and Syria is that the narrative that ISIL developed of creating this caliphate makes it more attractive to potential recruits. So when I said that we are containing their spread in Iraq and Syria, in fact, they control less territory than they did last year. And the more we shrink that territory, the less they can pretend that they are somehow a functioning state.
All right, so there it is right there. The president never, under any circumstance, admits that he's wrong. He's never wrong. So even when he says something that sounds absurd and nonsensical, you know, ISIS is contained, and then hours later they kill hundreds of people in just a wild killing spree in the capital of one of the great civilizations in history. Of course, he's not wrong. So he's a person who thinks that he'll explain some of the details, and then you realize he's very well educated. He's very up to snuff. He's up to speed. But this kind of leadership is going to kill us. And if we bring these Syrian refugees in, and there is even 1% of them that are ISIS killers, there's going to be bloodshed. And this president doesn't even seem to care about that because he's working on some greater truth. 633 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. We'll be back. I've got some more clips for you. Amazing clips from Obama and other people on this topic. And it's 6:37. It was a little bit cool when I got up this morning, and it was, you know, it had the feeling yesterday that it was going to snow when it was real blustery and the temperature dropped. It's 35 degrees right now. So here's a clip from Jim Acosta that I think really puts sets the cat amongst the pigeons, as they say. Here's Obama at this Antalya summit. An amazing question from Jim Acosta, to which the president is irritated the president had an irritated day yesterday?
I'm too big for that. Jim McCosker.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I wanted to go back to something that you said to Margaret earlier when you said that you have not underestimated ISIS's abilities. This is an organization that you once described as a JV team that evolved into a force that has now occupied territory in Iraq and Syria and is now able to use that safe haven to launch attacks in other parts of the world. How is that not underestimating their capabilities, and how is that contained, quite frankly? And I think a lot of Americans have this frustration that they see that the United States has the greatest military in the world. It has the backing of nearly every other country in the world when it comes to taking on ISIS. And I guess the question is, and if you'll forgive the language, it is, why can't we take out these bastards?
Well, Jim, I just spent the last three questions answering that very question. So I don't know what more you want me to add. I think I've described.
Well, I mean, the president is, I'll let this continue, but I'm like, that's a great question. The greatest military, not just in the world, and not just a little bit better than the other militaries, but head and shoulders beyond anything the world has ever seen. And we cannot go in and take out a rebel. Think about it. Go in and take out this group of rebels, right? Who don't even really have a base. But they don't. There's no country in the world that embraces these people unless it's like Libya or Syria or some parts. You know, to embrace these people would mean that you're outside of you're beyond the pale. You're outside of civilization. And the president is irritated, and he's openly laughing. You know, this guy's from CNN's asking him this question. How could you possibly ask me that question? I've already disabused everybody of that. The president is interacting with a level of reality the rest of us can't possibly, unless you're an ultra liberal, cannot understand. And he's laughing at the people that don't see the reality that he does.
I've very specifically what our strategy is, and I've described very specifically why we do not pursue some of the other strategies that have been suggested. This is not, as I said, a traditional military opponent. We can retake territory, and as long as we leave our troops there, we can hold it. But that does not solve the underlying problem of eliminating the dynamics that are producing these kinds of violent extremist groups. And so we are going to continue to pursue the strategy that has the best chance of working, even though it does not offer the satisfaction, I guess, of a neat headline or an immediate resolution. And part of the reason, as I said, Jim, is because there are costs to the other side. I just want to remind people that this is not an abstraction. When we send troops in, those troops get injured. They get killed. They're away from their families. Our country spends hundreds of billions of dollars. And so given the fact that there are enormous sacrifices involved in any military action, it's best that we don't, you know, shoot first and aim later.
The president is Blade Runner. He's centuries ahead of everybody else. I've got this clip here, though, where he basically said, this is the thing that I really felt so aggravated at him. I want to read you this thing first, and then you can hear him say it. What I'm not interested in doing, get a flavor of this here. What I'm not interested in doing is posing or pursuing some notion of American leadership or American winning or whatever other slogans they come up with that has no relationship to what is actually going to work to protect the American people and to protect the people in the region who are getting killed and allies and stuff and people like France. our allies in France. I'm too busy for that. Oh, my God. This is like one of the richest political statements I've ever heard in my life. You could write vast numbers of books on this. He is beyond this old idea of America as the cowboy, America as the knight in shining armor that sweeps in and saves people, right? Or gets involved in a fight and is interested in winning. President is beyond these parochial, these kind of like silly ideas. And he can't stand the jingoism. It really bothers him, all of this American exceptionalism and everything. It's just coming out in his statement right here. He's irritated. He looks down on people who want decisive victories when this. So he's presenting himself as this, what the Germans used to call a world spirit. He's this great mind. He's this great person who is the spirit or the intellect of his age. He's so far beyond other people, and he's irritated that he has to interact with these lesser individuals who are not interfacing with reality. He doesn't have time for it. This guy is the ultra narcissist. Check this out. And this is from Powerline Blog. Took me, dear God, please play. This took me at least an hour to find. It was impossible to find this clip. I had to keep searching over and over. Well, I tell you what, it is not cooperating. Let's take a little break and I'll come back and play that for you. An amazing clip. Truly. 644 Kelly O'Connor Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 523-1450. Kelly here, and I'm trying to get this clip to play here. I don't know what the devil's going on. Maybe my connection to the internet is stronger at home, but it's caught in buffering mode, whatever that means. But I found it. Maybe I'll get it to play. I will have to bring it up after the break on the hour. But I do have a couple of other clips that I think are remarkable. And what I think I'm going to do is play those for you because they add to this sense that the president is, and I did read it for you so you know what he said, but this idea, think about this, the idea that we are beyond American exceptionalism, he wants us to step back. He's not going to get caught up in these debates. He doesn't have time for it. I mean, I find this. We're the one world power. We don't have to debate over that. We are the one superpower. We're either going to use that for good or not. For the president, it's an irritating question, though. Check this out. Here's Ted Cruz. Obama believes Americans' leadership in the world is a remnant of evil imperialism. I believe this with all my heart, that's how he sees it.
At pro-Obama websites like Hawking Point Memo, TPM News, there are headlines. Ignore the freakout. Here's what Obama really said about, quote, America winning. And they're attempting to contextualize away his entire set of remarks today. But if I had the time, I'd play the whole thing, Ted Cruz. It's an indictment of his ideology.
It is a profound indictment. And there's a reason, Hugh. You know, a lot of people are confused. Why would a president not want America to lead? Why would a president not want America to win? And you have to understand
or mock
radical.
Those who say that or who yeah. mock those that even if that's all he's doing, why would you mock people who said that?
But the reason is you have to understand the radical that is President Obama. You know, Barack Obama was 4 years ahead of me at Harvard Law School. And I have described President Obama as the perfect Harvard Law School president. And I don't mean that as a compliment. My wife jokes that eventually they're going to revoke my law degree. But the reason is as follows. Every view of the Obama administration is orthodox wisdom in the Harvard Law School faculty lounge, and the view of the Elite Academy, and Hugh, you know the Elite Academy very, very well. The view of the Elite Academy is that America's leadership in the world is fundamentally illegitimate, that it is the product of oppression and hegemony. It is a remnant of an evil imperialism. That is what manifested in Obama saying we should lead from behind. He believes the world is better off when America recedes from the world and doesn't lead because our leadership is illegitimate. And if you look at what President Obama has done for 7 years, along with Hillary Clinton, it has been to abandon our friends and allies, whether the UK, whether Canada, whether Israel, and to appease and show weakness towards our enemies. The reason Obama was not marching with France is because he thinks America shouldn't be leading and shouldn't be winning. And it's not a malevolent desire. It is an extreme ideological view that American leadership is illegitimate. And that is
contrary
to the views of the American people.
All right, exactly. I hadn't even heard that clip yet, but exactly what I was saying. You've got somebody in the office who believes that they are better than the question. The notion that we could or should go in and wipe out people that we clearly have the power to do and the force to do, and God forbid we control any territory over there, is nonsensical, because it's a war that nobody really understands unless you're part of his group. And then you can understand that it's not a traditional nation-to-nation war. That doesn't really matter. What matters is these people are sweeping up and kicking butt, and they're not just dominating regions of the globe. They're going in and they're trying to establish this caliphate. They're killing people who don't agree with them. They're raping and murdering their kids. They're beheading children. And Obama is going to argue on basically nuances. This is what he has done since he's got into office. He sees himself as just a superb mind. And he sees all the, this is why it's so important to him to say ISIL instead of ISIS. You know, because he really, and he pronounces things correctly. Because that's a super genius would do that, right? This guy is a total disaster. I'm telling you right now, he could have the highest IQ in history, which I strongly suggest he does not have. But if he did, it wouldn't make his decision-making any more right or any more safe, would it? We've got to worry about ISIS attacks in this country, and he's getting up there like a peacock, you know, showing off, and he's laughing. He won't even take the time to argue that these people are so wrong in wanting to stop, say, Syrians from moving into this country, or their people are so wrong when they want the special forces 10,000 SEAL units or, 10,000 special forces people to go over there and wipe these people out. You're so wrong. He's not even going to bother answering to you. Isn't that the hallmark of a tyrant? I make my decision and nobody gets to argue. We'll be right back. 653 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. We will be back. All right, I have a few more clips for you, but we're about to end the show in the first hour. But here's Dianne Feinstein, who I disagree with a lot, but she is a smart lady, and she's not a lapdog for the president. Listen to this.
He's a threat to the homeland. Senator Dianne Feinstein from California joins us now. She is a ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee and an expert on all of this. Senator, thank you very much. We have been talking about the president's strategy. He reiterated his strategy today. You have said before that 50 special forces is not enough. What would it take to defeat ISIS?
Well, let me begin by saying this, Andrea. I've never been more concerned. I read the intelligence faithfully. ISIL is not contained. ISIL is expanding. They've just put out a video saying it is their intent to attack this country.
All right. Just that's a long interview, but I'll just leave it there. Here is something from Mitt Romney, God forbid, but criticizing Obama, warning of an ISIS attack. This was just published yesterday.
There's a Washington Post article out this morning that suggests that establishment Republicans are getting nervous. And they're getting nervous because some of the things that you've touched on, that they're not that comfortable with Donald Trump being the front runner. They're not even right. that comfortable with Ben Carson being the front runner. And that there might be this groundswell of interest in drafting Mitt Romney to get into the race. What do you think?
Well, I'm not a party to those discussions. But the last time I talked to Mitt a couple of months ago, he was adamantly opposed to getting into this race. So, look, this is a crazy season. Anything's possible. Maybe Mitt's had a change of mind. I haven't talked to him. I do think that what you saw in Iowa yesterday is the beginning of the unraveling of the loudmouth campaign.
But would you want to see Mitt Romney? I mean, I know that you've made it clear how you feel about Donald Trump being the front runner. So what is?
Well, anyway, Mitt Romney warning of I thought that was going to be more to the attacks. But see if I can play that other clip for you. If I can get, we do have a call. Thanks for the call. We have a few seconds. Who's this?
This is Tom. How brilliant was it for him to release 5 more prisoners from Gitmo just a couple of days after the Paris attack?
What an idiot. Yeah, thank you for the call, Tom. All right, folks, it's not wise at all to do stupid things, is it? We've found out the hard way. 6:59, we'll be back with Walt Rubel, and we've got more news on Charlie Sheen's HIV status. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, Tom again. Giuliani's got some good points, too, if you can find them on the internet, Newsmax and stuff like that, where we should have left troops over there, at least 30 to 40,000 troops, you know, to contain, to help to mess with ISIS. Well, and I'm sure Newt Gingrich has some good clips out on him, because he's kind of precise and to the point when he talks about Obama.
Okay, I'll see if I can find him. If I can't play him in the next hour, I'll play him tomorrow.
I hear you. Okay.
Thanks, Tom. How's it going, man?
I just played the initial clip of Charlie Sheen admitting he has HIV.
Positive.
They said he's known for 4 years. No, but I mean, just it's a big deal. You're sleeping with people. Some of those people may not have access. They may not have access to his
You can't tell me
you'd be willing to sleep with him. God, he's known for 4 years. Think of all the women he's gone through. Thank you.
Yeah, he said he said you guys are friends. He's a funny guy, man. And I never remember seeing him. I have never seen it before. He was really entertaining. Obviously. Yeah, he mentioned that. He is an entertaining guy, man. He is one of the most entertaining people. Is he? Didn't surprise me, you know. Oh, he is?
It's Kelly, and I've got Walt Rubel here. Good morning, Walt.
Good morning.
Hey, would you mind if I played a clip from the Charlie Sheen? Now, Walt is scrambling for his headphones.
There we go.
Here is from the, and I played this last hour. I believe I must have been the first person in the Valley to play this for you. If that's my claim to fame in life, it's pretty sad. But Charlie Sheen revealing his HIV status. I played a 30-second clip. Here's a longer clip from that. Charlie Sheen has AIDS, and I've just got a text from somebody. He's had it for 4 years. Walt was not overly shocked. He said, we're living in a day when this is all treatable.
Well, yeah, see, I relate everything to sports events from my teams. And so when I hear about AIDS, I immediately think of Magic Johnson. And you know, the last famous person where that was really a huge deal. And I, along with everybody else at the time, assumed that that was a death sentence, that, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road, mm-hmm. we would be having his funeral. And so that sort of changed the way I sort of look at AIDS. But I didn't look at it through the prism of, oh, this guy has had how many partners over the years and have potentially exposed, you know, I mean, let's hopefully not, but certainly potentially exposed how many.
Well, you know, one of the things that it came out was that he had been with 50 porn stars, but that he was a repeat. He was a repeat flyer on that, and that he had been with transsexuals. So it kind of makes you wonder, did he pick it up from sex? Was it drugs?
Oh, yeah.
Was it from a doorknob, maybe?
Yeah, I was going to say all of the above.
Yeah, it could be. Here's a little clip from that.
Charlie Sheen is known to millions for his award-winning body of work on television and in the movies. But this morning, he's here to talk about something immensely personal and private. Charlie, good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see you, man.
How you been?
Good. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. We've spoken a lot over the last couple of days. And
I'm just saying, first and foremost, that your producing team, Katie Dissler and the Zim, have been awesome.
Thank you.
As have you.
Thank you.
Just absolute compassion it just means the world. Thank you.
You know there are a lot of rumors out there right now, and you would like to address them head on, so I'll give it to you.
Go ahead. I'm here to admit that I am, in fact, HIV positive. And I have to put a stop to this onslaught, this barrage of attacks and of sub-truths. And very very harmful and material stories that are about the threatening the health of so many others, which couldn't be farther from the truth.
I want to talk about those in a second. How many people have you told about this?
I've told enough that I trusted to be in the in the position and the situation that I'm in today.
People you thought you could trust at the time?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
How long have you known about this? When were you diagnosed?
Roughly 4 years ago. Yeah. It started with what I thought based on this series of cluster headaches and insane migraines and sweating the bed completely drenched 2-3 nights in a row that I was emergency hospitalized. I thought I had brain tumor. I thought it was over. After a battery of tests and spinal tests, all that crap, they walked in the room and said, "Oh, here's what's going on." So it's a hard 3 letters to absorb, you know. It's a turning point in one's life.
4 years you have been trying to keep this secret.
Yeah.
And you have said that you have been the victim of betrayal and extortion. You told me that a lot of people have actually demanded money to stay silent about this.
That is true. Yeah. And I have paid those people. Not that many, but enough to where it is depleted the future.
How many people have you paid?
I don't want to guess wrong, but enough to bring it into the millions. And that's what people forget is that's money they're taking from my children. You know, they think it's just me, but I got 5 kids and a granddaughter. You know,
you wrote this to me in a letter and shared it with me yesterday. In and around this perplexing and difficult time, I dazedly chose or hired the companionship of unsavory and insipid types. Imagining prostitutes. Regardless of their saltless reputations, I always led with condoms and honesty when it came to my condition. Sadly, my truth soon became their treason as a deluge of blackmail and extortion took center stage in this circus of deceit. Were these people that you had had sexual contact with and were claiming that you had transmitted the virus to them, or were these people who simply found out about your status and were threatening to tell the world?
More the latter. For some reason I trusted them. They were deep in my inner circle, and I thought that they could be helpful, and instead they as I wrote, my trust turned to their treason.
So we're talking about lawsuits filed against you here, Charlie. We're talking about shakedowns.
We're talking about shakedowns, yeah.
Is it true that on at least one occasion you had a prostitute come over to your house who, after a sexual encounter, went into your bathroom and with a cell phone took an image of your antiretroviral medication?
That's correct, yeah.
And then threatened to sell that image to the tabloids?
Yes, this is after I told her that thank you for your time, we're not going to see each other anymore. After she spent the day at a health food store buying me herbal medication.
Are you still paying
to help me?
Are you still paying some of these people?
Not after today, I'm not.
So you think that by speaking this truth, you will get out from under that?
That's my goal. That's not my only goal. We'll talk more about that later. But I think I released myself from this prison today.
And it's interesting because these people kept coming over to your house. They kept gaining information that they then used, in your words, to extort you. And yet you continued the behavior. You kept bringing these unsavory types,
which is my part,
to your house.
Which is my part. Absolutely.
And why?
Yeah.
Why would you make the same mistake over and over?
Because I was so depressed by the condition that I was in that I wasn't. I was doing a lot of drugs. I was drinking way too much. I was making really bad decisions. That part I own. 100%.
Have you knowingly, or even perhaps unknowingly, transmitted the HIV virus to someone else since your diagnosis?
Impossible. Impossible.
We're going to talk to your doctor with you in a second about that.
Yeah. Good.
Have you had unprotected sex on any occasion since your diagnosis?
Yes, but the two people that I did that with were under the care of my doctor, and they were completely warned ahead of time.
Have you, since the time of your diagnosis, told every one of your sexual partners before you had a sexual encounter that you were HIV positive?
Yes, I have.
No exception.
No exception.
Have you been involved? You know, if you look at the CDC website and they talk about the transmission of HIV, they talk about risky behaviors. Would it be fair to say that you have been involved in all of those risky behaviors?
Negative. No, you're talking about needles and that whole mess? No, definitely not.
Do you know how you contracted the virus?
Sitting here today, not entirely. No. No.
I want to read you something else from the letter you handed me. You said, this is after the time of your diagnosis. The personal disbelief, karmic confusion, shame, and anger led to a temporary yet abysmal descent into profound substance abuse and fathomless drinking. Was this that whole tiger blood winning period in your life? Was that a result, that meltdown we saw, a reaction to your diagnosis?
I wish I could blame it on that. That was more of a roid rage. But this was on the heels of that, let me say, yeah.
And when you say shame in that, the stigma
sure.
that is attached to this diagnosis is one of the worst parts about it. People don't take action. They don't get help because of that stigma.
Sure.
Do you still feel that stigma?
Not anymore. I don't. I have a responsibility now to better myself and to help a lot of other people. And hopefully with what we're doing today, others may come forward and say, thanks, Charlie. Thanks for kicking the door open. You know,
you're going to stick around with us. We're going to.
All right, folks. That is maybe a little long, but. That is the confession of Charlie Sheen on being HIV positive for 4 years. What's your reaction, Walt Rubel?
Yeah, you know, the more that went, the less I cared. I mean, that's just my reaction. And for him to end it on this sanctimonious, please, you know, he's an incredibly unlikable guy who proved once again why that is so. He has lived. He says the last 4 years. I mean, let's be honest. He has lived a lifetime of selfish, poor choices. Self-destructive, correct, but not only self-destructive, destructive to everybody and everything around him.
To me, the humorous part is these people are taking money. They're taking food off the table of my children.
Of his children, yeah.
He's worth $150 million. I think he estimated he'd spent $5 million on silence payments.
Yeah, and that ends today, and we can all be thankful for Charlie that ends today. I mean, listen, that whole winning tiger blood. I mean, I didn't get that at the time, and there are things in American culture that I'm at the age now that I understand. I just don't get it, and Charlie Sheen is one of those things. People are interested in him because he says and does. Crazy, stupid thing.
Outrageous thing.
Outrageous is a better. Well, but this is the inevitable result of that kind of behavior.
All right, then it's a moral story.
I guess so.
It's a homily.
Yeah, it is.
We're here with Walt Rubel. It's 7:17, and we just heard Charlie Sheen admit that he has been HIV positive for 4 years, that he has not infected anyone, that it was impossible, and the two people that he slept with without protection were well aware.
And the real victims here are his children.
Okay. Anyway, 7:18, and we're going to come back and we'll talk about some more. Let's. What do you want to get into?
Well, I heard I was home yesterday, and I did have a chance to listen to the president's press conference. That everybody. And so I'd like to talk about that a little bit.
Let's come back and we'll talk about that a little bit. 7:18 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOB. I'm Kelly O'Connell. With Walt Rubel here, 523-1450 to call in 523-1450, and we'll be back to talk about the president. All right, so at 7:22, I'd spent the first hour kind of going over clips from the associated with Paris and terrorism and stuff, the president's statements, and then we heard a little clip from Charlie Sheen's HIV admission. But you wanted to say something about what the president said at the Anatolia summit? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it was
in Turkey.
That's right. And it was about this time. It was early yesterday morning, which was, you know, I was able to watch it before I went into work. And I think that you mischaracterized it a little bit in the earlier hour when you talked
about... You listened to my earlier hour? Please don't tell me you're becoming a convert. Well,
when you said that he was laughing and strutting or something, that really wasn't.
That's not how it came across.
No, it was more peevish, I think is the word I've heard mostly.
Irritated.
Irritated is another good word. Certainly not boasting or arrogant or strutting or anything of that nature.
I don't think I said that he was boasting.
No, you said laughing and
I think
something.
What I was trying to communicate, maybe I didn't, maybe I missed on this, but that he was... He kind of scoffed at the people that disagreed with him.
Yeah, dismissive, certainly. But I want to get into the meat of
the
issue.
And
that is, you know, what do we do about ISIS? What do we do about Syria? What do we do about Iraq?
And I'd love to get your opinion on, for example, whether we should have Syrians moving into the country.
Yes, yes.
When we're told that they don't really have much of a way to background check these people, especially if they're coming in large numbers.
Well, yes, that is true. But it is also true that what our process is and what happened in where this guy walked through Greece and essentially walked into France are two very different processes. I mean, they had no idea that guy was there or who he was. I mean, he came in a wave of people that came in completely unchecked.
Is it possible that what the Europeans are doing in terms of bringing these people in is crazy in terms of not background checking them, just like floods of people? And they couldn't possibly know who some of these people
are. Well, when you say crazy, I think you have to look at what their alternatives are. The people are showing up in waves at their border. They are walking there. I mean, that is the difference between us, our situation, and theirs. And so they are dealing with the reality that is walking towards their borders. Now, they can shut their borders, and some of them have done that, but there is a human situation there that has to be dealt with.
All right. So
didn't ask for it, but it has arrived at your border.
But I mean, if these, let me ask you in the first place, they are Muslim for the most part.
Right.
Might be some Christians or whatever else.
Right.
They are leaving the homeland of the Muslims, the Middle East, and they're coming into Europe.
Right.
Why don't the Middle Easterners take in their own people?
Well, that's an interesting question. And some of them are. I mean, certainly Jordan is. Jordan always does. Jordan always has. But Jordan is a small country.
So why doesn't Saudi Arabia
is a much larger and a much more wealthy country, and you're asking the wrong guy.
Because
I agree with your point. Your point is they should be, and I agree with that. But the fact is they aren't, and so that doesn't change the reality for Germany and France and these other countries who have these waves of people showing up at their borders. In terms of the United States, I do think that, you know, our refugee process is a rigorous process. The idea that these people are going to come in here completely unvetted in waves, the same way that they did in France, is just not true. That's just not how it happens.
All right, let me ask you this then: are we rigorous on the border, our own border?
Well, I would say so.
Seems like people come here, and even if they're a member of this supposedly the world's most violent gang out of this Central America, those people come in.
If you mean, do we have the border sealed? Do we have a wall going from California to Texas?
I would
challenge
you on that. I would say, from what I've seen, we're not rigorous on the border. Where there are people that are in large number of people that are criminals that are getting across the border, and we know about their past. There's a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. I'm here with Walt Rubel. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. It's Mike.
Hey, what's up?
Hi. Hey, Kelly. I just wanted to ask you, what do you think Governor Martinez's stance is on the Syrian
I have
refugees?
No idea.
Oh, I do.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we got a statement from her yesterday. And she has tried to take sort of a middle ground where she is, and I wish I had the statement in front of me. It was basically a three paragraphs. Where she wasn't flat out saying, no, we will not take them, But on national news shows, I have seen that New Mexico is considered among the states where the Republican governors have raised objections, I think would be the best way to put it. All right, Mike,
well,
thanks.
I just like, Kelly.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just like to say any of those hot Syrian girls are welcome at my house.
One way to raise a level of debate.
Hopefully they'll be dog friendly. Thank you very much. But here's the point on that. Governors don't get the call. We don't have guards on state borders. We have welcome signs on state borders. Once you get admitted into the country, you are free to roam. And that is ingrained in the American spirit. We are not going to stop that.
Wait a second. If they say that 50% of the governors have said they're not going to take in these refugees.
They don't get to make that call.
Why?
Because they.
That's crazy.
How are you going to stop somebody who is living from Colorado and wants to move to New Mexico? If you are the governor of New Mexico, how are you going to prevent that from happening?
Just say I'm going to have my state police pick these people up and bring them back to the border.
How are you going to find them? How are you going to know that happened?
I don't know.
I don't either, because it's impossible.
Wait a second. Nothing is impossible.
Yes, right. Just like Donald Trump is going to round up 11 million people and move them back, all the really, really good ones.
You're sounding righteous. Why?
I'm sounding cynical because I'm responding to a cynical argument.
Which is what?
Which is this notion that governors can control who comes in and out of their state. Clearly, they cannot.
Well, I mean, we have a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Tom one more time. They're on the radio now promoting the people hurry up and get their driver's licenses now before January when something's going to happen where there's a little indentation on the license saying, you know, you can't vote or something like that. And they're promoting that now. And
who are they?
I hear it coming on.
Who are they?
Oh, it's on the news in between your segments.
Well, I mean, saying it's on the news, it doesn't really answer the question. Okay. Who are they?
Whoever the newscasters are during the breaks on your show.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Tom.
A little dubious there. I don't think the newscasters are saying, hey, run out and get your, if you're illegal, run out and get your license right now. I doubt that's that.
All right. Anyways, the governors have no power. They just have to watch whatever comes across the border. We have another call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Hey, yeah, what's up?
I don't understand why the president or anybody for that matter thinks that we're obligated to take in a group of people from on the opposite of the planet. Has nothing really in common with our society or our culture, our core beliefs, to tell you the truth, and that we should take them. They say they can vet them. We have no information on these people. There's minimal data available.
It's already been stated out. It's already been put out there that these people are somewhat impossible to vet. I believe the FBI said that.
Yeah, it's impossible. So what's with this complete lie that we're going to put them through a rigorous vetting of the information available?
That's not a lie. I mean, we're going to put them through the most rigorous vetting that we can. Now, it may not be up to your standards. It may not be up to James Comey's standards. Well, and fair point.
Will it be up to your standards?
I'm not certain.
My point is this. Why should we take the risk of having even one terrorist get into our country from another country when we can completely avoid it? What sense does that make?
The answer on a large scale, moral scale, in my opinion, this is just my answer, is that ISIS was a creation of the Iraq war.
So it's our fault.
America's fault.
If Saddam Hussein were still in charge of Iraq, ISIS would not exist. ISIS is the remnants of the Ba'athists that we left behind. And that's just the fact.
It's our fault. It's our responsibility.
We broke it. We broke that country.
It
was very broken before we got there. Don't misunderstand me.
So now we're gonna pay penance by letting terrorists come into our country and kill us.
No, I certainly don't agree with that. I'm not saying that.
Well, that's what you're saying.
No, it is not. let's clear.
Yes, it is. You're
well,
saying
no,
we need
you're
to
misinterpreting and twisting my words.
We're obligated to let these people in.
I didn't use the word obligated. You're saying if we
well,
are obligated, why
Come
would
on,
it be?
Well, own up to your own work, man.
I do. You're not listening to me.
I'm listening to you, but I'm sick of hearing how you Democrats keep putting all the blame on America and now want to open up our borders to a threat that we can completely deny being here.
Let me
it
be clear. I
no
am not
sense.
Putting all of the blame on America. That situation over there has been severely messed up for centuries. All I'm saying is the current situation with us is we took out the guy who was keeping some level of stability over there. Yes, he was doing it in a horrible way, yes, but that has been the American tradition. We always prop up those people. This time we decided to take him out. This is what we wrought. That is my opinion.
And so now we should eat it by allowing us terrorists.
No, we should not. You are not to me on that. What I am saying is there is a refugee crisis, and we have an obligation to deal with it. If you can come up with a way to deal with it over there, where we are putting our resources, and I am all for that. If there's a way to deal with this in Europe, I am all for that. But what I'm not for is saying, okay, the world deal with this. We're going to put up a fortress, and we're going to be the one country that doesn't show leadership. All we hear from the Republicans all the time is we got to show leadership when it comes to the military. But when it comes to humanitarian things like this, though, we have no obligation.
Thanks for the call. Okay, thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Just briefly, we got to take a break. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Ted. The dictionary defines a patriot as a person who loves his country and supports its interests. How does taking these people in our country support our interests? That's it.
Thank you. All right, we will be right back. Have Walt Rubel here stirring the pot, and we'll be right back.
Now get the local buzz.
All right, so I'm here with Walt. Now, we've got a couple of texts here from Greg. Walt is full of it, and yes, Hillary took out Gaddafi, and we sponsored the Arab Spring. But let me just say this, Walt. I don't buy into this idea. You're making a moral argument.
Can I respond to that?
Can I finish my statement?
Oh, okay.
Please, you can respond to anything you like. Let me just finish what I'm saying so people can follow it. I don't agree with this idea. We have a moral obligation to take these people in. We've got a phone call, and I'll let you respond, okay? Just hold on a second. Thanks for calling Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, Tom. How many of these people are going to go on to the welfare rolls as soon as they get here?
Well, that's a different issue, but I guess...
Are you going to help support them all?
I'm going to pay taxes.
You're going to take some of them into your home?
No, I am not. I'm going to pay taxes.
Well, what if, like... Mike.
Okay, well, that worth interrupting things for. Can I respond to that?
Yeah, but respond to what, though?
To the text.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, his what he's saying is Hillary Clinton and the Democrats are entirely responsible for Libya because of their decision to take out Gaddafi. But George Bush has no responsibility for Iraq, apparently, is what he's saying.
Well, I mean,
both are responsible.
I think there's enough blame that we can spread it around to more than one person.
Okay, I'm just responding to the text.
All right, so... I hear what you're saying, which I agree. We made a decision to go into Iraq. It was not necessary in the sense that we could have not gone into Iraq and still survived. It was a preemptive war, but it was a war based on, according to the people at the time, that they were taking out these weapons. Whatever. That may not have any substance. We ended up in there. We took the country over. We took the head off the snake.
Right.
And at some level, I agree that we are then responsible for the aftermath. But a lot of people will say, if that's true, Obama shouldn't have taken those forces out of Iraq.
Yeah, no, I understand that argument.
What do you think of that argument? What's your response?
I think that what you're saying is that we have to stay there forever.
No, I never said that.
Well, no, I think that's the logical extension of that argument.
That is the reductio ad absurdum response to that.
I think that is the historical response.
Well, let me just respond to your response. That I think that you stay there until
it's tenable to leave.
I agree. And, okay. And I think if you look at the history of that region, the Sunni and the Shia will be at each other's throat until there is, Joe Biden had it right. I think until there is a partition that gives them each borders, and even then, it will be a tenuous peace at best. I think the notion that we as the United States could go in and fix this, we've seen the result of that. I think that was, I think the elder Bush got it right in his recent book when he said that his son was ill-advised and that there was a hubris in that administration, an arrogance, a swagger that led them to dangerous and destructive results. The question is, what do we do about it now? We could argue about the history of it forever. We have ISIS. What do we do about them now? And that was what. Go ahead. We have a call.
Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Eddie.
Eddie, what's up? Go ahead.
Wasn't it your side that used to tell people that they couldn't legislate morality?
Who?
And here you are now.
Wait. Be more specific just so we can respond.
I assume me.
Well, just in legislation, just morality.
Who? Are you, you say
religion.
Eddie, you've got two people.
You can't legislate.
Eddie.
You can't legislate religion.
Eddie, listen.
And that's what you're trying to do.
Eddie, would you please listen and not be typical, like, interrupter?
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
You say, didn't your side say this? You be more specific. Walt, your side has said you can't legislate morality and you can't legislate religion. Eddie, go ahead.
Yeah, and then you talk about compassion and our moral obligation and things like this. Are you trying to legislate your religion over mine?
No.
It sounds like it.
And in
what
way?
That we're going to be in a Iraq forever, but yet you want to bring the
I don't
war to our shores.
No, I don't. I've tried to be clear about that, but people won't listen or won't believe me, or I don't know what. I think there is a horrible problem over there that we helped create that we have a responsibility to try to help solve.
All right,
that does not mean that I think that we should take terrorists into our country. I wish I could explain that more clearly.
I wish there were words
in the English language that would help people understand that.
Well, I know that you're passionate about this, but let me break in here. Here's the thing that's going to be thrown out. I'm not trying to get in between you guys, but here's the thing that keeps coming up in my mind. Do we owe these people so much that if they come in and there are terrorists among them and they attack and kill people, we have to accept that? We have to live with that.
Okay. No. How could I be more clear with that? I've answered that a dozen different times in a different different ways. No. We should vet them. We should try to prevent terrorism at every different turn. We should beef up our security. We should. That is the new reality. Is going to any kind of public event from now on is going to be extra security, extra. I mean, I get that, and I support that, and I this idea that I want terrorists to come here, I it's just ridiculous. And if I'm getting upset or emotional, because it's I'm responding to a ridiculous argument.
Go ahead, Eddie.
Okay, you don't want terrorists, but yet not turn in terrorists among them.
What?
They won't tell you that the fellow sitting next to them is a terrorist.
Okay, here's the evil they again. I assume by they you mean all Muslims. Is that right?
Okay, all anything is a
Well, that's what that's the problem when you say they. When you say they won't do this, they won't do that. Who?
If 98% of them.
Okay, 98% of all Muslims look the other way and support terrorism. That's your argument.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Eddie. All right, I got to say a couple of things here. Number one, they recently did a poll among some Middle Eastern people. I'll be able to find it in just a minute, although my computer's screwing up, and found that a large number of people in the Middle East do support, for whatever reason, terrorist activities.
Which is the argument I've been making all day long, or all morning long. That area of the world is incredibly messed up.
All right. So here's I'm just put the cat amongst the pigeons here. Yeah. We've got a situation where we are told that it's impossible to vet these people.
Well, we weren't told that by people on the right. That is an opinion when people tell you that.
I believe Well, I'll have to find the article.
And James Comey has suggested that it would be very difficult. But we would be as rigorous as we could. And I should suspect that when we brought that limited number of people over, that the law enforcement in those communities would be well informed. And I suspect that they would be keeping an eye on those folks, as they should.
But maybe not.
Well, if not, then they should. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Or how about if not, let's not bring them over until, you know, I mean.
So our incompetence, we're unable to keep an eye on
maybe
folks?
Maybe.
Oh, my goodness.
How competent were we at 9/11?
Okay.
How competent were
so
we?
So we have no responsibilities because of our incompetence.
Well, if you're the leader, what are you going to choose? That we should be competent.
We can't be
let
a fortress, Kelly.
Finish.
We cannot
let
choose to be a
finish.
Fortress.
Well, for God's sakes, you're getting too tightly wound on this. If you're the leader, are you going to say we should be competent? And if we're not, we're going to take them in anyway? That's crazy. Folks,
No, what I'm going to say is we're going to increase our competency.
All right, we'll be right back. Talking to Walt Rubel, 523-1450 to call in. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE 747 flying the friendly skies. And we'll be right back. We're going to continue to talk about bringing in Syrians and the whole issue. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. Thomas.
Thomas, I'll put you on hold. I got another caller that called in the same time. I'll be right back.
All right.
Hey, this is Kelly. Who's this?
Kelly, this is Kathy. Tell Walt that he does have some support out here. You know, the only ones calling in are the ones bitching about there's not enough in America for me. How can I share it? So, yeah, you know, the people that are so ultra-Christian are the first ones to turn their backs and walk away.
Kathy.
I can't believe it.
Kathy.
I can't believe it. But
Kathy.
That's okay. I
Kathy.
Support what the president's doing.
Kathy.
I support what he said.
Kathy.
And I agree with Walt.
Kathy, let me... You know, it's not about sharing. It's about safety.
That's right. And you know what? They can be vetted, Kelly. Leave the 20-year-old men over there and bring in the women and the children and the people that are dying and let
Kathy.
Them come in and have part of the good life.
Kathy.
It's not just about us.
Kathy, you realize that that a large number of these immigrants are men.
Yeah, well, if they're single men and they're in their 20s, they need to be vetted extensively. I mean, we need to go over one side and the other, take DNA and put trackers on them. But don't tell me that France can't track and we can't track. They can eavesdrop on 350 million people and they can't keep track of 20,000.
Kathy.
You know, I think they ought to
Kathy.
Redirect their efforts on
Kathy.
These guys.
You want to say this on the air?
No. Everybody hates me, but I'll let Walt take the brunt of everything, I guess.
If everybody hates you already, come on the air.
All the ones that are calling in.
Thanks, Kathy. All right, bye-bye. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Johnny.
Johnny, hold on, and I'll put you on the air in just a minute. There's one person ahead of you.
Quick. Okay.
We're not on the air.
Okay, quick, just a quick comment. There's
I'm about to go on the air.
Okay.
We've got some callers. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this? Briefly.
Hi, Kelly. This is Art. I just wanted to throw in that Bush didn't go into Iraq or Afghanistan by himself. He had full congressional report, including from some of the liberals that are disclaiming his action now. And I'm sorry. Were you going to say something?
No, I'm just waiting because I've got three people on the line. So just
okay. The other thing is the United States gets a lot of grief for spending more than the next 23 Western countries on defense. We defend more than half the world. We are Europe's defense system, and they set up a great socialist. They've set up socialist leaning systems
that's true,
in
Art.
Their countries.
Yeah,
let them take care of the refugees and show us how well their socialist system works.
Thank you for the call, Art. Thanks for the call. Who's this?
That's Thomas.
Thomas, just briefly, we're running out of time.
Sure, I want to encourage Walt there. Unfortunately, people don't listen, Walt. We do have responsibility for what we do around the world, whether we're Republican or Democrats. And at this point, it's unfortunate what I heard yesterday on CNN. A very poignant question: is this World War III? If people don't calm down and listen and respect each other, that's probably going to be the result.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Johnny? Hello? All right. Okay, so just running out of time here. But, okay, so Kathy called up, and she didn't want to be on the air because everybody hates her already, according to her. Except Walt. But she is saying that we're being selfish. And my response to that was, it's really not about not wanting to share. It is about safety, in my opinion.
It's about a balance, and I get that. I'm not saying it's
no, but
all
I'm saying that's
all,
that's why the right is pushing back because of
right,
safety.
Right, but the right is saying that it is no balance. That we're going to put up a fortress. That we're not going to let anybody in, unless, of course, they're Christian.
No.
I mean,
well, why don't we bring the Christians over
we
here?
We don't have time to get. Well, we got a little bit of time to get into
and
that.
And we got two calls. I'm going to ignore them and listen to you.
Okay. So we got into this a few weeks ago about, you asked me at that time about military. Should the military get involved if it is defending Christians? And my answer at that time was no, that, we use the military when it is in our interest as a nation, and that doesn't involve the religion of the people in another part of the world that we may or may not be going in to try to benefit.
All right.
That's I'm not sure the same thing as this issue. Still, I come down on, do we have a religious test on who gets into this country and who doesn't?
How about not a religious test, but a civics test, a political test?
Okay.
You accept our way of doing politics or you can't come in.
So as long as somebody takes a vow and you're okay with that, they can come in?
I don't know.
Well, how else do you determine that?
I don't know. That's a good question. But these people, this part of the world, they don't generally accept our presuppositions about government.
I'm fine with that. I thought that originally was part of the process where you show up at Ellis Island and you have to take a vow.
Where's our Ellis Island, though?
I don't know. I mean,
that's a problem, right?
Yeah, it's a problem because it's just an entirely different world and an entirely different system.
Okay, so there's been a couple of articles that came out that I've got to study in greater length or more deeper, that the vetting process for the Syrians just has not been established. So we would at least agree until we get that together, we got to hold off.
Well, I would agree that there needs to be a serious vetting process. And that, that's right.
Serious or Syrian?
Serious for the Syrians.
All right. We got a couple of minutes left. Why don't you sum up what's on your mind in terms of what you think the most important stuff that's come out the past few days?
We have talked off the air about, okay, we're now in a situation where ISIS has committed attacks against the French, the Russians, the Turks, the Egyptians. And the United States is not, I don't think fit. Well, maybe it fits into that category as well. My point is there's this enormous coalition that one would think could go in and with the correct leadership coming from the United States.
A coalition of the willing is in the wings.
Could take out ISIS.
All right.
You would think that could happen.
Sure.
The point the president was making yesterday that I'm not sure people were listening to is, okay, we do that. What comes next? I was making the point earlier that ISIS was the creation of us taking out Saddam Hussein. So if we take out ISIS and then leave, or if we take out ISIS without a real idea of what replaces them, I think it is this perpetual one problem after another.
All right. So we caused the problem. Do you admit that Obama helped cause the problem with his support of Arab Spring?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I helped cause the problem. Well, I mean, assuming that the situation now is worse than it was then. And I think that you have to, from the point of America, you have to assume that.
You have to assume because Libya is now in the hands of rebels.
Yes.
We almost lost Egypt to the Muslim Brotherhood. And Syria is by definition in civil war. And it's a civil war with outside players that make it so much more dangerous.
Yeah. So it's a frustrating situation. I just, that's all I'm saying. And I understand the president's frustration and I understand everybody's frustration. But I think when you hear people running for president who suggest that there are easy, simple solutions to this, be wary.
Okay. And we have a call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show is this.
Don't you think we need a woman president for a change?
Is this Frankie's little sister?
We almost made it the whole hour without Frankie.
I think that was a Frankie, a person who's pretending to be Frankie. Yeah. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Pedro.
Briefly.
All right. Walt, the situation was under good hands. The worm had turned and we were gaining control until your sneaky snake weasel president decided to cut and run like a yellow-bellied sapsucker.
Well, that's a nice analogy, other than it's not the facts. I mean, we could have held control as long as we were willing to be there forever. I agree with that.
Thank you. All right, folks. So anyway, I want to thank Walt for coming on. And do you ever predict boots on the ground to deal with ISIS?
Yeah, I do. I think that's where we're headed.
When do you think that's going to happen?
Soon.
The stuff going on in Paris, is that going to continue in Europe? Do you see that as just a permanent part of Europe now?
I think Europe has to change the way they live. I think they have to live more like the people in Israel and more like the people in the United States. I think security has to become more a part of their everyday life.
And yet you thought, and we all thought, that there was higher security in France. And even if you see these pictures, these people getting down and praying in the middle of the street every day. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. I want to thank Walt Rubel for taking the valuable time from his precious day to come into the show.
Sure, always enjoy it.
And have a great day. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Ciao.